Welcome to Speaking in Maine on Maine Public Radio. I'm Roddy Nickpour. Today we take you to Thompson's Point in Portland for the annual Evening for the Environment, hosted by Maine Conservation Voters. This year, the organization honors Sherry Huber for her work in conservation. Then we'll hear the keynote address from Gina McCarthy, who served as the administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency from 2013 to 2017. The program was pre-recorded for broadcast at this time, and this program will be archived on our website, mainepublic.org. Click radio to find this program at your convenience and many other past Speaking in Maine programs, and you can find it as a podcast. Kicking off the program today is Maureen Druin, Executive Director of Maine Conservation Voters and Maine Conservation Alliance.
Welcome to the Evening for the Environment. My name is Maureen Druin, and I am Executive Director of Maine Conservation Voters and Maine Conservation Alliance. One of the best parts of my job is that I work with a lot of wonderful people, and I am delighted to see many colleagues and friends here today. Welcome. And I'd like to start the evening by thanking the people and businesses and organization who made tonight possible. And first, I'd like to thank our generous business and organizational sponsors, in particular, our premier level sponsor, Bangor Savings Bank. Champions, Diversified Communications, Elliottsville Plantation, Lee Auto Malls, and the Island Institute. I'd also like to say thank you to everybody who was a super host or on the host committee. Woohoo! I'd also like to thank Rainey Schaefer and CJ Johnson from our staff and our, and to our amazing event committee, Brigitte Kingsbury, Michael Boland, Dan Amory, Sophie Halpin, Roger Burley, Brad Coffey, Lucas St. Clair, and a special acknowledgement to Adam Lee, who worked just about every day with Rainey to make this a great event. Thank you all. Finally, I'd like to thank the office holders who are here. Congresswoman Shelley Pingree. Attorney General Janet Mills. We have State Senators Eloise Vitelli, Brownie Carson, and Kathy Breen. And several representatives, Chris Babbage, Patrick Corey, Ryan Fecto, Marty Groman, Craig Hickman, Matt Moonen, Teresa Pierce, Lois Reckitt, and Dean Rikerson. Thank you all for being here today. Because of legal restrictions, we can't talk about elections or name individual candidates tonight, but I would like to thank all of you who are candidates running for office and for stepping up for the future of Maine and our country. So I don't know about you, but I am ready for tonight's celebration because we all work really hard, and at least once a year, we should be able to take a moment to celebrate our successes. Even if our successes are simply defending the laws and protections we already have. Like this past legislative session, when we made sure Maine's renewable energy standard remained intact and defeated an attempt to put an extra tax on owners of hybrids and electric vehicles. We've gotten very good at defending our protections at the state level and defeating bad ideas. But boy, it was really hard to lose on solar again by just 2 votes. And it's so disheartening to watch the Trump administration dismantle the Clean Power Plan and basic protections for our environment and our health. The poet and farmer Wendell Berry said that ours is not a fight you can stay in very long if you look on victory as a sign of triumph or on loss as a sign of defeat. We fight anyway because we have hope. And because, as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. says, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. Now, in my house, I'm going to share something a little embarrassing with you. We have a family motto. And the family motto is, the Druin ceases, never give up. Now, I've invoked this dorky family motto numerous times, though I'm often greeted by an eye roll by my daughter. But one day, I picked my daughter up from school when she was in first grade, and she was bursting to tell me something. She was so excited, and she ran over, and she said, I made it across the monkey bars for the first time. And she said, you know, I got halfway there, and I wasn't going to make it, but then I remembered our family motto, the Druin ceases never give up. And so she made it across to the end, and she was just so proud. And we all have our own monkey bars to cross, to end climate change, to stop the pollution of our air and waterways, to protect wildlife habitat, and to ensure that all of us have a clean and safe environment in which to live. We will cross these monkey bars together, because even if our hope falters, we will never give up fighting. We are a room full of fighters. And there are two here who stand out tonight, Sherry Huber and Gina McCarthy. Now, I'm going to ask you, did Sherry ever throw in the towel despite facing setbacks? No. Has Gina stopped serving on the front lines even though her legacy at the EPA is threatened? No. We in this room are motivated by a shared commitment to defend the earth, and we will never give up. Wendell Berry continues his quote by saying, "We have not quit because we are not hopeless. I am not looking for reasons to give up. I am looking for reasons to keep on." Tonight is an evening to celebrate hope, to celebrate the earth, and to celebrate the fighters. And speaking of fighters, I'd like to introduce Roger Burley, who is the chairman of the board of Maine Conservation Voters.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you for coming. It's great to see such a huge conservation-minded crowd here tonight, because together we're going to be honoring one of Maine's most prominent conservation-minded citizens and leaders. But more about that in a minute. The Harrison Richardson Award was instituted in 2009 in honor of an exemplary Mainer, lawyer, legislator, visionary leader, environmentalist, and member of the then Maine League of Conservation Voters, our former name. The award's criteria, which guide our process of selecting a worthy and appropriate honoree, include showing courage by standing up to special interests, bucking their party and outside pressure, using personal political capital to further environmental policies, and using their capacity and connections over a period of time to make environmental protection a personal priority. I think we're going to all recognize that this is a worthy recipient. But right now, we will be seeing video clips honoring Sherry and celebrating this evening. So,
what a pleasure it is to join in this celebration of Sherry Huber for her many contributions to the people of the great state of Maine. I'm also delighted to welcome Gina McCarthy to our beautiful state. It is fitting that the Maine Conservation Voters has brought you together for this event at the height of our glorious fall foliage season, a powerful reminder of how important Maine's environment is to our economy and our quality of life. And it is fitting that this award honors the legacy of Harry Richardson, a great champion of environmental stewardship. In Sherry's distinguished career in both the public and private sectors, she has demonstrated over and over again her commitment to conserving Maine's natural resources. From energy and waste management policies to preserving our working forests, Sherry has created her own enduring legacy. Through her service in the Maine legislature and in such organizations as the Maine Watch Institute, the Forest Society of Maine, and the Land Trust Alliance, Sherry has proven herself to be a dedicated and effective leader. I also appreciate Sherry's work as the executive director of the Maine Tree Foundation. Maine's working forest is an international model of successful, responsible ownership where both public and private interests are valued. The people of our state have always rejected the false choice of pitting the environment against the economy, because here in Maine, the environment is the economy. Sherry has strengthened that heritage, and her work will make a difference for generations to come. Sherry, the Harrison L. Richardson Award recognizes leaders whose courage and dedication have better protected Maine's environment. I can think of no better person to receive this prestigious award. I thank you for your many accomplishments and wish you all the best in the years to come.
Well, trying to pick through my notes here, I will say that as board chair of Maine Conservation Voters, I have drawn the long straw tonight and therefore happily get to introduce Sherry to any of you, the very few of you who do not know her, know of her, or who are not already in awe of her, which is, again, the very few. So just 2 weeks ago today, I was standing at a view overlook on Route 201 near Jackman, taking in the breathtaking sight of Addian Pond. I had been there before in a group organized by, of course, Sherry, and we were returning from a Forest Society of Maine retreat at Rockwood. Yes, the same Forest Society of Maine, which holds a conservation easement on that awesome landscape I was taking in at that very moment. And the very same Forest Society of Maine, which Sherry has led as board president, been a tireless ambassador for, and has generously supported for years. Love the synchronicity. I first met Sherry 2 decades ago when our lives at Wainfleet School intersected. But I know I was reading about her in the print media way, way, way before that, probably in the old Maine Times, mostly. A woman running for governor of Maine. That was clearly newsworthy. Well, folks, or should I say fans, most of Sherry's life has been newsworthy. This indefatigable lady has been living and working at the center of Maine's environmental universe for a very long time. I have a page of her resume, but you know what? She deserves, you deserve to hear it again. Getting into the meat of her resume, Sherry's the former executive director of the Maine Tree Foundation. She worked as executive director of the Maine Waste Management Agency and as a consultant to private nonprofit organizations on fundraising and development issues. She served in the Maine House of Representatives, as you heard, from 1976 to 1982. She has chaired the board of the Maine Watch Institute, is a trustee of the College of the Atlantic and the Land Trust Alliance, as well as the University of Maine School of Law Board of Visitors and the Yale School of Forestry and Environmental Studies Leadership Council. In 2002, she was the recipient of the Down East Magazine Environmental Award, and that's just some of it, as you just heard. Phew. In March of this year, and by the way, I come to this being a land trust guy, but being involved with MCV and the policy discussions have really broadened my outlook on this totally necessary work. And hearing Sherry at our board meetings, her comments, her absolutely incredible commitment in the face of, well, let's face it, we are two of only the three Republicans on the Democrat-heavy MCV board. In March of this year, at the Samoset in Rockland, as I just told Tim, I sat back and soaked up the paeans delivered in Sherry's honor by Tim Glidden, president of the Maine Coast Heritage Trust. And the standing ovations he received that day from 400 people started me thinking about what Maine conservation voters should be doing for her, for you. Well, we're doing it here tonight. Sherry and I have served on the MCV board, as I just said, as two of the three lone Republicans on a Democrat-heavy group. But it is a totally nonpartisan group, and much of our conversation is focused on how to draw more Republicans into the battle to conserve what is not only the most beautiful about Maine, but what is the most stunning and important feature of Maine's way of life and its economy, our environment. Everyone in this room knows it. There's some people who like to deny it. Recently, she and I partnered in an outreach initiative to engage Republican legislators to act as a Republican environmental caucus. And how about that for a concept? And to therefore earn good points and plaudits on the MCV's legislative scorecard. As a sort of a newbie in the State House, I immediately recognized the traction and respect that she engendered in that building. They listened attentively to her persuasive case, and I believe that we, well, actually she, made some headway there in an ongoing effort that should never stop. So the Richardson Award was instituted in 2009 of an exemplary Mainer. I read the criteria before, and I will submit that this woman, this lady, could not be more eminently qualified to have earned this award for her decades of commitment to Maine. I have been inspired by Sherry, learned from Sherry, and will continue to follow in her considerable footsteps. Yes, as you heard her say in the invitational clip, Sherry Huber has actualized and acted upon her own counsel to all the rest of us. All you have to do is step up. Well, she has indeed done just that. So Sherry, please step up and receive her award and our hearty and heartfelt gratitude and appreciation.
Very admiring of him, so I'm feeling really grateful to receive an award that has his name on it. He was a real environmentalist before they were fashionable, I guess you could say. Audubon was the first environmental group that I actually was working with, and I've also been able to enjoy going further and introducing people to the Maine woods with the Maine Tree Foundation, taking groups into the woods and showing them the natural environment and why they should care about it and want to make sure it's intact and there for the next generation. Maine Conservation Voters is an organization that is basically formed and continues to try to help the people of Maine better understand their environment and to vote for people who care about and will take care of the environment in the future. So it's active in that respect, but also in education, which is probably the basis for our success. The economy clearly needs to be supported, and one reason it will be is because people want to come to Maine to see and enjoy it and spend money, which is also part of the equation. And as a result, bringing outside dollars into our state is a good thing. Maine is not a particularly wealthy state, as everyone knows, so the more people who come here in a controlled way and leave their money behind when they go home, the better it is for us. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I guess I'm a good example. I grew up in Connecticut, which is a perfectly nice place, but I wouldn't trade it for Maine, having lived here now for 50 years. And I think my family feels the same way. They're all still here too. So there's something very special about our state, and I hope people recognize and appreciate that. All you have to do is step up. Thank you very much. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
You're listening to Speaking in Maine on Maine Public Radio. Maine Conservation Voters is honoring Sherry Huber for her lifelong work in conservation. In just a few moments, we'll hear from our keynote speaker, Gina McCarthy, who led the EPA from 2013 to 2017.
Well-earned applause. Now I'd like to introduce MCV's board president, Jen Burns Gray.
Good evening, everyone. I have the pleasure of introducing our keynote speaker this evening, Gina McCarthy. Gina is currently professor of the practice of public health at Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health, and the director of the Center for Climate, Health, and the Global Environment. Gina has been leading advocate for common sense strategies to protect public health and the environment for more than 30 years. She served under President Barack Obama as the 13th administrator of the EPA from 2013 to 2017. Her tenure as EPA administrator heralded a paradigm shift in national environmental policy, expressly linking it with global public health. She led EPA initiatives that cut air pollution, protected water resources, reduced greenhouse gases, and strengthened chemical safety to better protect more Americans, especially the vulnerable, from negative health impacts. Gina signed the Clean Power Plan, which set the first ever national standards for reducing carbon emissions from existing power plants, underscoring the country's commitment to domestic climate action and spurring international efforts that help secure the Paris Climate Agreement. I think I'm getting a little teary. What's happened? Gina worked with the United Nations and the World Health Organization on a variety of efforts and represented the US on global initiatives to reduce high-risk sources of pollution. A longtime public servant, Gina was previously assistant administrator for the EPA's Office of Air and Radiation, Commissioner of the Connecticut Department of Environmental Protection, Deputy Secretary of the Massachusetts Office of the Commonwealth Development, and Undersecretary of Policy for the Massachusetts Executive Office of Environmental Affairs. In the EPA Office of Air and Radiation, Gina strengthened collaborative efforts with public health agencies and organizations from across the U.S. to identify and reduce public health threats to human health from harmful air pollution, including carbon pollution that fuels climate change, by updating health and technology-based emission standards, establishing the greenhouse gas standards for cars and trucks, promoting energy efficiency and alternative fuels, and she was instrumental in developing the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which we know something about, a multi-state effort to reduce emissions contributing to global warming. During her career in Massachusetts, Gina advised five governors on environmental affairs, worked at the state and local levels on critical environmental issues, and helped coordinate policies on economic growth, energy, transportation, and the environment. Please join me in welcoming Gina McCarthy.
Hello, everybody. Well, the first thing I want to say is thank you to Jen. Her listing made me realize just how friggin' old I am. So it was great. Sherry, congratulations. I want to say two things to you. Number one, that was the best acceptance speech I have ever heard in my life. And number two, as the ex-commissioner of the Connecticut Department of Environmental Protection for 5 years, I say to you and your family, good riddance. Just kidding. You know, what's wonderful about being here, honestly, and especially talking to the Maine conservation voters, which I thank very much for inviting me, is that I've lived in New England every single day of my life. If I haven't been here, that's where my heart has been. And it's wonderful to come back to Maine. My husband and I and my family made a habit of coming here at least once a year because it's such a special place. I just came back in August from a week at Moosehead Lake, which I only talk to people here about because I want nobody else to find it. So I understand it may be economically beneficial, but that ain't why I go there. I go there because it's one of those special places that should always be protected. So thank you for all of the work that you do. You know, I want to also mention Lucas, who actually hosted me this afternoon and gave me an office so that I could make a couple of calls. And I want to recognize the tremendous work that went in to protecting the Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument. You know, it was just another example of how important it is to protect the special places that connect human beings to the natural resources we need. For some reason, as the world has developed, we've lost our very essence and our connection to the natural world. And I spent my 5 years in Connecticut. I think the best thing I ever did was to start a little effort called No Child Left Inside. Because people would ask me, what are the greatest risks to the environment today? And I would tell them two things: climate change and the fact that kids don't go out and play anymore. If you want to protect places, you need to have your kids out there and make that connection to the natural world. And I will tell you that at some point in time, we will have an administration in Washington that understands the definition of in perpetuity. It just might take a couple of years. So I'm very excited about opportunities in the future. But right now, the things that I'm working on have to do with the connection between climate change, health, in particular kids' health, and the natural world. And I'm doing that because I think climate change is important. I think it is not just important because of polar bears. I think it's important because it's about our kids and it's about their future. But before I get into those issues, which I really hope to talk about, I want to dive into a little bit of what I call, and this is a technical term, forgive me, the crazy-ass things going on in Washington, D.C. It's the best way I can figure out how to describe this. Because it is crazy-ass. It is absolutely nuts. Listen, I want to talk a little bit about what's happening at EPA because you may not realize it, but you're going to leave here more hopeful than when you walked in. That is what the plan is. Because if you remember way back when that we had a lot of pollution in this country that you could visibly see. If you remember, and I don't know if you do, but I do because I'm 64, I was hanging around here when black smoke was spewing out of smokestacks, when we had hazardous waste barrels all over the place, when you had people living on top of them, when you have rivers running and burning. And we actually had the best president of the United States ever that stood up and stopped all that. Do you know who that was? Richard Nixon. It was a joke, but it's true. The best president part was a joke, but it was Richard Nixon who actually stepped up and created the Environmental Protection Agency and started all the laws that allowed us to actually make significant progress moving forward on that pollution. And I personally haven't worked just for five, but for six governors. I was appointed by a Democrat, and I had five governors that I worked for after that, all of which were Republicans. Now, I will readily admit that a Republican in New England looks a lot like a moderate Democrat on the Hill. But nevertheless, we knew back then, and we knew every step of the way, that clean air wasn't just to benefit Democrats. I actually learned that Republicans really appreciate it if their kids don't have asthma attacks. And they actually like clean water. And when they don't get it, they call EPA to demand it. So let's get over this partisan politics. And that's the last time I'm going to say the word politics, because it wasn't about an election. That is the last time I'm going to talk about it, because the challenge we face today is to stop connecting these issues with partisan politics. I don't want either the Democrats or the Republicans thinking that climate change is part of a party platform. I want to go back to the fact that pollution kills. It's an indiscriminate killer. It really holds communities back, it holds our kids back, and it's time to stop playing politics with issues as important as traditional pollutants and as important as the issue of climate change, which, by the way, is an existential threat, not just a minor consideration. And I want to let you know that all of the work that was identified as work that was attributed to me was in no way my work. It was the work of this country. It was the work of a government that responded to the people in this country and understood that we had to continue to support our efforts to deliver clean water and clean air in a planet that was healthy enough to support and sustain human populations. That's what we did with climate change. And I will guarantee you that we did all of those rules right. And by right, I mean we followed the science. We didn't play with it. We didn't dictate and change cost-benefit analysis to suit our purpose. We followed the law. We followed the science. And we did outreach like nobody else has ever done, because in the United States of America, it happens to still be a democracy that is defined by, of, by, and for the people. So there was no way anyone was going to fall behind. So believe me, I know that everything we did is now being rolled back. Well, let me tell you something. An announcement in the Rose Garden doesn't mean anything. It is a press release and a statement. What means something is final rules in the United States of America, and when you do them right, you can't undo them with a Rose Garden announcement. You can't absolve the United States of America from its responsibility to be part of the international community. And it is not going to actually live well beyond today. And we have to take back our ability to speak for ourselves, to hang on to the rules that mattered, and to move forward. Because as far as I know, what we did represented the core values of the United States of America that we have supported for decades, and we are going to continue to demand leadership to respond to those core values. That's where we are today. That's where we're heading. That's why I am hopeful. And if you think that you can now mope around and whine and say, oh, it's all gone to hell in a handbasket, which was one of my mother's favorite sayings, and that I'm going to let you get away with it, I'm not. I'm going to slap you upside your head and tell you that if I can get up every morning and be hopeful, then get your ass out of bed and be hopeful too. That's what we have to do. I don't know about your mother, but my mother told me that nothing good ever comes easy. So if you think that I'm going to sit back and let my country and my core values and my work go to hell in a handbasket, then you are going to be alone in your misery, because I ain't joining you. Look, in the United States, the work that EPA does is hard. You don't get to be EPA administrator if you think that every time someone goes boo, you run and hide, right? You stand up for yourself, you do things right, and you listen to people with every breath of your being to understand how we make progress together. That's not leaving aside Republicans. That's not ignoring the interests of the business and the economy. It's actually delivering on all of those issues, making reasonable steps forward. That is exactly what we did. And I'm proud of that work. And there is no administration that is going to come in and say, oh, I have another idea. Let's turn the world on its head. Who's going to go to court and fight against what we did by just saying, I don't like it. It doesn't work that way. So it's hard to regulate, and it's supposed to be. Because regulation is all just about making sure that we ensure our constitutional right to live healthy lives. But as a result, you need to prove it. You need to say that you need to regulate in order to get that right to assert. You need Congress to give you the authority, and you need science to back it up. And I feel very comfortable that this administration can't articulate any of those things. So the one good thing about today is that while they want to toss everything up in the air, it's still stuck to their fingers. Because they don't know how to do it. They're not getting it right. Every time they try to roll things back or delay, the courts are whacking them right back at them. As long as this ping pong continues, we won't make progress at the federal level. I understand that, but it ain't going to be rolled back. And guess what? The rest of us are going to come alive. That's what's going to happen. Look, if you think that this administration is going to win by denying climate change, it's delusional. Because climate change is real. Climate change is being felt today by everybody in the United States of America. And climate change is fueled by carbon pollution. We tackled pollution before. Let's stop glamorizing it. Let's stop talking about polar bears. Let's stop thinking about it's only the rich people who live on the coast that's having a problem. And let's start getting real. People in the United States know that climate change is real. It's happening, it's hurting them, and it is threatening all of us. You know, this month, it's actually Children's Health Month. You'd never know that reading the EPA webpage, but I will tell you that's what October is. And October's important because climate change hits our kids the hardest. Climate change hits those communities that can't pick up and move themselves the hardest. If you think climate change isn't a health issue, you're wrong, because it's not about the health of polar bears. It's about the health of our kids. It's about our kids' future. It's about protecting them from air pollution that will increase under a changing climate. It's about protecting them from increased allergy seasons. It's about protecting them from creepy diseases that mosquitoes will bring to us that we used to thought was only somewhere else. So get a grip on yourselves. We have the fight of the century wrong, many centuries on our hands, and we have to stick together and recognize in Children's Health Month that we have a job to do, and it's called being responsible to our children. It's called being responsible for their future. That's why we do it. You know, for the first time in my life, I had a grandson. I have a grandchild. He was born 7 weeks ago, and he's really little. He's very cute. As any grandparents out there, boy, who knew that being a grandparent was so cool? Now I know. But listen, he is my face of climate change. Pick yours. Pick yours. Get focused on the people you care about the most and then start rallying because it's their future that's at stake. 2050 sounded so far away a long time ago when we were talking about climate change. Oh, by 2050. My grandson's going to be 32 when he's in 2050. He deserves better than the future that we're projecting if we don't stand up and take the bulls by the horn and do something about it. And I don't think we need to sit still just because the federal government has decided to fall asleep or to roll back. I don't care what they do. You know why? Because in this country, nothing good ever started at the federal level. Nothing. Give me one thing. What starts at the federal level is actually a result of a 20-year fight that began at the grassroots level that said, I don't like the pollution or other things that are impacting my life, and I'm going to make a change about it, and I'm going to get annoying, I'm going to pass laws, I'm going to start demanding things of my state, and the state's going to start getting squidgy. When that noise gets loud enough, the state starts going, oh, I have a great idea, and they're going to do exactly what their communities wanted, and then the states are going to go wacky, and like the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, the states are going to bind together, and they're going to go wacky, and then the federal government going to go, oh my God, we have a patchwork of things, and the business community can't tolerate it. So they go into a huddle and they come up and they say, I have a brilliant idea, and it's so innovative. This is what you need the federal government to do to lead. And it's exactly the same thing as the grassroots organizations asked for 20 years ago. So my message to you is this: we do not have to tolerate what's going on at the federal government and say to ourselves that we can make no progress because they don't like us anymore. We just have to continue to persist. Now, every morning, my husband gets up, and one of the first things he does is to turn on MSNBC. So I'm lying in bed, and I'm hearing, and I get up and I say, what is going on? And he goes, oh, look at what he tweeted. And I, you know, and I say with all love and affection to my husband, Ken, shut up. I am not starting my day like this. Have a cup of coffee. Let's walk around Jamaica Pond. It's a really nice day out there. Let's start the day without this nonsense, because we're letting it eat us alive. It's taking our energy. It's sucking our hope. It's wrong to let it happen. You know, we have a job to do. So the first thing I want to do is I want you to recognize that I think most people recognize in the United States, in fact, I know this from polling, which was absolutely correct in the last election. Okay, that wasn't. I know from polling that most people actually understand that climate change is happening. And we can't really deny that when in 2017 you had more than $300 billion in damages. If you think climate change is expensive, it is. If you think taking action to actually stop climate change from getting worse is expensive, then you need to do a little bit of comparison shopping, because it ain't nothing compared to letting it go. But what I want to tell you is this, that there are many people that are seeking in the federal government to deny climate change. And I want us to get together, and I want us to agree on three facts. I'm going to state them, and you are going to repeat them after me. Unless you totally disagree, in which case you can leave the room prior to. First of all, climate change is real. Climate change is a result of man-made emissions. That is why women need to rule the world. Not true? Look it. I have hope because we are going to rule the world. And I have hope because there are signs that in the face of this trauma in the federal government, maybe it is a wake-up call to our democracy. Just maybe we were too complacent. Maybe we thought what's happening now could never happen. Now we know it can. Now we know that a democracy of, by, and for the people means that each one of us on that Tuesday of Election Day needs to get up off our butts and go and vote. Maybe we need to reach out to the young people to explain to them that now is not the time to disinvest because they don't like it, but it's time to remember just how far we have come and just how far we can go if they become part of the actual voting process. Let's make sure that we do that. And if we do, then you will do me a big favor, because it means that you will be standing up and you will be pulling up your big girl pants, pulling up your big boy pants, pulling up your gender neutral pants, and you'll be taking action. That's what tonight is all about. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Speaking in Maine on Maine Public Radio. Today we joined Maine conservation voters in Portland for the annual Evening for the Environment. Former EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy delivered this year's keynote speech, expressing her hope for the ongoing preservation of the natural world. If you missed part of the program or you want to hear it again, you can always find it on our website, mainepublic.org. Just click radio to find this program and many other past Speaking in Maine programs. Music in this hour comes from Our Alarm Clock. Charles Beck is the executive producer of Speaking in Maine, and Speaking in Maine is edited by me, Roddy Nickpour. Thanks for joining us.